We don't think our way into a new way of acting. We behave our way into a new way of thinking. You can have a concept, but you don't really know it until you live it, until you're actually putting boots on the ground and taking action that's exposing, that's risky, that's uncomfortable. But that's the way we reorganize our minds, that our souls grow. And no better place than marriage and family to learn how to do that.
Welcome to Conversations with Dr. Jennifer, a collection of interviews on the topics of relationships, sexuality, spirituality, and more, all featuring Dr. Finlayson Fife.
Dr. Jennifer, it is great to see you again. It's been far too long.
Yeah, it's been a few years.
It seems to be, yeah. I mean, it's for sure been a while since we've seen each other in person.
Yeah.
But even in this format, it's been a while. So
yeah.
You seem to be in the creation mode, I guess would be the way to describe what you've had going on the last several months and years.
Yeah, years. Yeah, it's been a lot of things have been kind of in a holding pattern while I've been writing this book, and yeah, it's been. It's nice to be finally at the phase where it's being launched into the world, and so it's fun. It's good.
That's good. Well, let's dive into that, because the idea of the book, what's your target? And then I got a couple things I want to kind of drill deeper into. What's the hope with this thing?
Sure. Well, so I was approached by an organization called Faith Matters. That's an LDS. So I grew up LDS, and the focus of my work has been working with Latter-day Saints around how to create better marriages, how to be more at peace with ourselves, our bodies, our sexuality, and referencing Christian theology and Latter-day Saint specific theology around the embrace of the body. The body is good, and helping with a lot of the, what I would say is kind of typical religious cultural fear of sexuality, but then because we can be so fearful of embodiment and pleasure, we actually interfere with creating peace in our lives and deeper joy in our marriages. So I kept that audience in mind, right, of course, because that's the group I feel the deepest loyalty to, I think, for lack of a better way of saying it. But it's really a book that's for anyone that really wants to better understand the relationship between sexuality and spirituality and how to create deeper peace in oneself and in a marriage, really how to be more joyful. Because my basic thesis is the idea that, you know, we were given bodies by God as a way to continue to grow in our morality, to be able to experience joy. And yet it asks of us to develop our capacity to love and to know. And marriage pressures that growth more than perhaps any other close relationship. And sexuality does in particular. And so how can we relate to our sexuality in a way that not only is not counter to our spiritual ideals, but actually facilitates deeper ability to experience beauty and peace and connection with a partner, but also with divinity. So
yeah,
so that's the book. Yeah.
That is so, so good and profound, because it just trying to figure out how we can create more peace with our own sexuality and desire would be so unlocking and freeing for so many people. because that seems to bind us up all the time, doesn't it?
It does. For humans. It's not just people that are religious. We, you know, how to relate to pleasure and the body and sensuality in a way that actually makes us stronger, that makes us experience joy without either repressing or indulging in a way that also interferes with our well-being. And so that's just a process of sorting out what that actually means. And so it's a human task that's not particularly easy, but a lot of times the messages we've inherited from our families, our religious group, make it harder, interfere. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you even have a section in here that talks about that every couple encounters incompatibilities that disrupt the illusion of this harmony we're going to have?
Yeah.
And then the way we respond will shape what the marriage becomes.
Yes.
So most of us actually react in a way that undermines the intimacy and growth that we say we really do want.
Yeah, 100%.
Let's go deeper into that, because this is that concept that you and I both know because of the trainings that are similar, and even in some ways some upbringings with a religiosity that's similar and overlaps, since Mormon and Church of Christ, which is my upbringing, they actually branched off together and then branched off. If you look at the tree of denominations, there's a whole lot of overlap. But it's so funny because we get caught up in what I say I want actually scares me to death when I actually start to pursue it.
100%. Many of us say we want intimacy and we want to be known and so on. But if we're really honest, very few of us, in fact, want that, because we want someone to just see the good parts and tell us how great we are and then go blind to the lesser parts of us. Very few of us really want to let somebody in on who we are, because as soon as you do, you wake up to yourself. You see your own limitations in the ability to love, your humanity. And so it really asks us to grow in our ability to have compassion for ourselves, for another, to also grow up the lesser parts of ourselves, to become better, to become kinder. And so intimacy is not for the faint of heart, and it isn't for any human being. I mean, this is not easy stuff. And yet that's where we find real peace, is if we can grow into someone that's able to create a friendship, a really intimate friendship. Mm-hmm. And so when we fall in love, well, it's like the gift of an inspiration of what the relationship can be. But a lot of us think that that's how it should just stay.
Right.
And when it doesn't, because it never does, if you really get to know the other person, you soon encounter that, oh my gosh, you're so different than me, and that's driving me crazy. And if you would just be more like me, we would be so much happier. And they're thinking, listen, I want to be with you, but stop telling me what to do, you know, because we want to belong to ourselves, not just belong to our partner. And so the conflict comes once the proverbial honeymoon ends. And usually our lesser selves hates the invalidation that comes, and we tend to either punish our partner, pressure them to be more like us, or we distance ourselves from them, or we yield to what they want to keep them happy with us. But in any of those easy or intuitive movements, we undermine the freedom and intimacy of the relationship. And for sexuality to thrive and for people to be happy in their marriages, they want to feel free. And so we often are doing things that constrict our freedom, make our relationships, our marriages less honest, because we're worshiping the god of validation rather than integrity and truth and growth. And so it's very easy to fall into those pitfalls. But when we do, we then create suffering and limitation in our marriages. But most of us do this without even really realizing we're doing it, because what actually will help us grow is so unintuitive sometimes.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's what's interesting, because Pam and I actually just recorded the show for the week that we're recording this right now. And we were talking about how the higher desire, lower desire dilemma, and how, to use your phraseology, I hinted at it in this episode, but your phraseology that I love is, well, I use where my spouse is wrong about me to avoid where they're right about me, of what's being exposed. And when we add that and layer it on with the idea of intimacy and desire, there's so many different things I can do when it starts going sideways that keep me from having to look at myself.
100%.
And I can keep blaming it. Well, you just didn't make the right response, or you didn't phrase it the right way, or your timing was bad, or you didn't brush your teeth, or you know, all these things. They are breaks when it comes to enhancing desire, but it's missing the bigger story of what's going on, which is what you seem to be getting after in this.
Yeah,
is there's a bigger thing at play here.
100%. Yeah. Yeah. And in a sense, when we're focused on our spouse, we're absolutely right about them usually. Like usually the thing we're critiquing, they are in fact doing. Mm-hmm. It's just like you said, that we're using that to not look at ourselves. And so I love the beam moat metaphor in the New Testament. It's such an apt metaphor. Like we're so fixated on the moat in our partner's eye that we can't see, that we have an offending beam, you know, that
right.
And we're literally blind.
Right.
And we think we can help them.
Right. We think we can see the little speck, but we can't because we're blind. Yeah.
Exactly. And so the thing we must do is deal with our own offenses. That's the only way a marriage moves forward. That's the only way we grow in our ability to love.
And isn't it fascinating, because you've been doing this career for a long time as well, to where there's people that we get an idea that I can see the sense in this, but I don't know if I really want to do it that way. Give me the tool to help get the speck out of their eye.
Yeah, totally.
I don't want to deal with mine.
Oh, I mean, most people, I don't know if most, but a lot of people come to me or take my courses and so on with that, really that being their focus. I need to get my spouse to take this course, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And of course it makes sense, because you are right. You do see things they're doing that are a problem, but you know, I know in my own marriage, sometimes when I'm most frustrated by my husband's behavior, it's like I want to erase how I am a part of his behavior, because, you know, it's oftentimes I'm doing things that would make it very easy to respond that way, right? Mm-hmm. And it's just like I want to erase that and focus on him, and that doesn't move anything forward.
Yeah, and so if you think about it then, we've got a history as people of, in large part, just avoiding ourselves.
Yeah.
Even though I carry myself typically in fairly high regard in other areas of my life. Like, I really think good of myself in a lot of areas as well.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of a, there's kind of a dichotomy going on here, right?
Yeah,
until 100%. Until the nitty gritty really gets exposed, which is kind of what you're describing about. Of
yeah. Well, and I also like in the New Testament where Christ says, no one is good but God.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think it's just really important for us to, it doesn't mean that we don't have value, of course. We have inherent value just by being children of God, you know, by being divine offspring in a sense. Like, so we have inherent value, but whenever we get too fixated on the idea that we are good, if we need that to be too true, we go blind to the ways that we are not good. And all humans do good, and they also do evil.
Mm-hmm.
And we like to go blind to the ease with which we do evil, the ease with which we do hatred. That we indulge in hatred very easily, you know, and so it's easy to not want to recognize it in ourselves, in our efforts to validate a self view that we prefer over what is in fact true about ourselves in our worst moments.
I want to pivot it slightly, just based on I think this can be a good continuation of a conversation from the episode we just recorded, because in it we talked about how the higher desire husband was trying to figure out how does he get in his own way? Should he ask? Should he initiate? And the lower desire spouse, the wife. And so we were just using this connotation as the husband and wife to encompass the two different poles in this dynamic, even though it can be either gender. But a lot of times it seems like the higher desire husband can take the stance of, the sex I'm offering is really good. I'm coming from a really, why would you not want this place?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then the lower desire wife could even take the stance of, yes, but I am folding into what you want. Why would you not want the role I'm playing, right? Because that's that element of, I'm doing my duty. I'm playing my role. And but there's something still being missed in it, because both of them can use the other for why they don't face themselves.
Yes. Yeah, definitely they can. So this is often in the intimacy of sex, you know, we focus on the other person's limitations, the things that they're doing that interfere with something better happening, and don't move forward, right? And if you're going to have a good sexual relationship in a long-term marriage, you have to have a collaborative alliance. You need a foundational reality that you both really choose to create an intimate marriage, which is not to say that means you should never say no, or you should never disappoint your spouse if you're the lower desire person or anything like that, but that you really are invested in doing your part in creating something that you both want, creating something desirable, something real. And because it's so vulnerable, sexuality, because it's so close to the bone. To be rejected sexually by the person you are sharing your life with can be so puncturing that we tend to handle these moments very poorly, either as the higher desire person or even as the lower desire person. I don't want to feel controlled. I don't want to be pressured. I don't want to. And again, sex thrives when we have a sense of being free. But when it comes to working out our relationship to sexuality, we start doing things that interfere with our sense of freedom.
Right.
And so it's very easy in those moments to then participate in creating sex that's really more about a power struggle than it is about an intimate connection.
Right.
I just finished teaching this course called Sex Worth Wanting. And one of the participants, very honest, and I really appreciated how honest he was about it. He was talking about, it was coming up like what we're communicating in the way we touch each other and the way that we initiate or don't. And he was being honest about the fact that the way he initiates is actually so flippant. And I asked him, I said, do you think when you say that, that she's going to say yes? Yeah, well, you know, because it was like, it was a little bit antagonizing, right? Mm-hmm. Now he claims to be very frustrated about the sex he doesn't get. And I think he is frustrated on some level. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, he's approaching that invitation with the almost guarantee that she's going to say no.
Right.
Because there's an indecency in the way he does it. And so it's ego protective. You know, when she says no, he can reinforce the idea that I never get sex in a marriage where this is supposed to be a sexual partnership and blah, blah, blah. And he can get that hit of superiority, which to him, he actually prefers, behaviorally speaking, he prefers that hit of superiority and the sexless marriage over revealing the underbelly and going towards her in a way that would actually make it possible that she might want it. Now, she might still say no, but he prefers the predictability and the superiority of her saying no.
Yeah.
Actually taking the risk of creating something better.
Yeah.
And a lot of us do that.
Yeah. That's that element of suffice it to say the devil we know, even when we don't like it, is what we can often create, co-create, cultivate, set up.
Exactly.
Rather than the opportunity of truly experiencing the sweetness of each other, the essences of each other. Because even that, like we started our conversation with, can be scary.
Yeah.
Because it's a side I don't see. A vulnerable side of you is a different person than the persona that's talking right now in some ways.
Right. And the woman in this partnership, she's like, you know, you say you desire me. You don't desire me. You don't even talk to me like I'm your equal. You condescend to me. You don't desire me. You may want to have sex. You may want me to go along, but you're no more capable of desire than I am. And she's absolutely right about that.
Right. And that's what's so interesting is because we can take whatever side of this dynamic our positions are and think of it as I've got high ground. I'm coming at it for more purity or better intention or goodness. And in reality, if it continually happens, it's likely not true.
Right. Exactly.
Because I would say you would agree maybe that one-offs and stuff, absolutely. I could be like, I really did take a risk. That was a vulnerable move. And it ended the same way.
Yeah.
But what would differentiate it in my mind is I would react differently.
Yes.
To it, because I would see it as, wait, that did come from a different part of me.
Yeah. Well, and if it's coming from a more solid place in you, it doesn't mean that it doesn't hurt if you are met with rejection. It doesn't mean when it's coming from something more honest and real that you are going to get your partner to do what you want necessarily.
Right.
But you are really offering something worth desiring. You're really offering yourself. You're really saying, I choose and love you and I want to be with you. That's harder to say no to. And even if you are met with rejection and disappointment, which we often are in life, you still have the anchor into your own soul. You have the sense of knowing who you are better, knowing what you're about. Mm-hmm. Because when we move through our life with deeper agency, with a deeper connection to what we honestly desire to create, who we desire to be, well, it's a kind of solace and an anchor for us, even in the face of life disappointing, even in the face of invalidation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that's that element. I don't remember where I heard this from within the last couple of years, but it was a book I was listening to that talked about many situations, if not all of life situations, require us to bring our best.
Yes.
It may not be enough, but we're still right. required to bring it.
Yeah, exactly. And it's really the only way to live. I talk a lot about Eros in the book, you know, and how Eros is linked to spirituality and how it's kind of an expression of faith. You know, but it's the human desire to reach beyond ourselves, the human desire for communion, for connection. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the most miserable people are kind of locked in their egocentrism and locked into the ego demand. But to grow beyond ourselves is an inherent risk. It's to reach and not find what you desire. It's to extend yourself and be disappointed. It's to love someone and have them not respond in kind. It's to love someone deeply and have them die, right? Meaning it is to encounter risk and disappointment. And mm-hmm. so even though the human soul yearns for communion with divinity, with the world, with knowledge, it's scary. And so we tend to retreat into ourselves out of that desire for control. But that's the most risky way to live because we are quite unhappy. Stepping out and doing what we believe is good, there is risk in that, of course. Mm-hmm. There's anxiety in it. But if it's being true to something in yourself, then you find what you need. It leads you somewhere stronger within yourself, at least.
Mm-hmm. And isn't this where we get it complicated sometimes? Because when we assume a role in a marriage, right, whatever role I'm playing as husband or as wife or as father or as mother, you know, all the different characteristics that make up a family, don't we then sometimes use a substitute of what that role I think is expected of me rather than who am I in the playing of this role? who am I?
Yeah, like that we can hide behind.
I can hide behind the role.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I talk about that a lot in the book that, you know, we, as a starting place, we inherit beliefs, we inherit identities, we inherit roles, and they're a valuable starting place, but we can often use them to try and get validation or reinforcement from other people or to hide in those roles rather than to show up as who we are, rather mm-hmm. than to really reveal who we are in them.
You know how much I love Cozy Earth sheets. I've raved about them regularly, and I continue to love them. They continue to wash well. They continue to stay on our super deep mattress. They make me happy every time I slip into them because they have just an amazing, breathable, cool, silky feel to them. Not only do they have sheet sets, they also have comforters and duvet covers. And the good news is that Cozy Earth is having a Labor Day sale. And this is kind of a reset time where kids are going back to school, transitioning from summer. And so in anticipation of the fall, guests coming for Thanksgiving, etc., this could be a great time to upgrade your bedding, especially because they are currently offering 30% off for their Labor Day sale. Remember that Cozy Earth stands behind everything they make with a 10-year warranty and a 100-night sleep trial. So this is a perfect way to test out their sheets. There's no risk in trying them. And their Labor Day sale is happening right now through September 8th. So head to CozyEarth.com and use my code JFF30 for an exclusive 30% off. Again, that's JFF30 for an exclusive 30% off, which is the biggest savings of the season. And as always, if you see a post-purchase survey, just mention that you heard about Cozy Earth right here. Thanks, everyone.
I'm going to go personal with you real quick because sure. You and I have been kind of on a similar journey. I remember a blog post you wrote about your mom.
Oh, yeah.
Not too long ago.
Yeah. Right?
And so I'm in the stage of aging parents and aging mother-in-law. So mm-hmm. both the women in my life in that regard, the mother and the mother-in-law, Alzheimer's and dementia. And so we're dealing with a different beast with each of these ladies.
Yeah.
And one of the things that Dr. Schnarch said years ago, just kind of an offhanded statement at one of the trainings we were at, he made a comment of, I am responsible to my parents as I deem I am, not as they think I am. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of a flipping of the role.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. In some ways, that's an embodiment a little differently of the role rather than yeah. I have been taught to be this dutiful son as yeah. they see it rather than yeah. wait, what about how right. I see it?
Yeah, it's growing out of that validation dependency that, you know, when we are children, we are very accustomed to deferring to external judgment, which is adaptive and important that mm-hmm. we need to do that, you know, that we need to look outside of ourselves to borrow a morality, to borrow a sense of self, because we haven't yet forged one within ourselves. But because validation feels so good, because invalidation feels so bad, it's very easy to stay in a dependent position, to keep looking for authority outside of ourselves, validation mm-hmm. outside of ourselves, and not growing into a deeper, honest internal authority. That is, I don't mean just I can do whatever I want mm-hmm. because I've got internal authority. I don't mean that. I mean right. a very honest integration of true principles, of really living according to our highest selves. And so then the self-determining would then be like, what is it? I don't want to just be run around by my parents' validation. Mm-hmm. What they expect of me when I'm a full adult, I haven't grown up. Instead, what is really right for me to do? What is the thing that in my integrity is really the right way to handle the dependencies and the needs of my aging parents, for example, mm-hmm. or my teenager? If you're waiting for validation from a teenager, you're going to probably wait a really long time, okay? Or make them quite unhealthy because they're busy trying to prop you up. Mm-hmm. But if you're really loving a teenager, it means that you're going to do what is needed despite invalidation, mm-hmm. you know, despite clarity or certainty, because anytime you're raising a child, nobody gives you certainty and clarity at all times.
Right.
And so it demands that we develop that within ourselves and tolerate the risk in living by it.
Right. And so in a lot of ways, this is just a continuation of the exact same dynamics that play out in a marriage.
Yes,
of, it is. You know, I think we refer to it in the similar fashion that marriage is like the toughest, most pressured crucible. You know, I refer yes. to marriage as personal development boot camp.
Yes.
And then exactly. sex within marriage, truly intimate sex within marriage, is almost like Hell Week. That's a weird analogy. But, you know, because it really does expose, what am I really capable of? What are my limits? What am I insecure about? What are my vulnerabilities? You know, it shows a lot of me to me.
Yes, it does. Yes.
And then your family does, this is all going on in all your family dynamic.
Yeah.
Just to varying degrees, right?
Yeah. Life reveals us, you know, and many of us spend our time just trying to get away from all the data because it can be overwhelming. And, these are not easy tasks because it requires this dual capacity to hold on to our inherent value, which some of us really struggle to do, especially if we grew up in a family that was more shaming or, mm-hmm. you know, that they didn't reflect our sort of divine value in the way we were parented. It can be hard to just hold on to that basic sense that I'm worthy and I'm worthy of love. On the other hand, we can get distorted in the other way, which is I'm just really great, you know? And so mm-hmm. don't tell me that I'm limited because I can't handle it. And I will make you pay if you tell me that I'm limited or you show my limitations. And so that neediness in us, very human, but you know, if we can't grow out of it, I mean, that's what humility is. A lot of times we think of humility as being like a doormat. And I think that's the distorted picture of humility. Humility is to be teachable, to be open, to be receptive to what is true, mm-hmm. both that I'm worthy and I'm flawed. Those are two true things. And the more receptive we are to what is true, the freer we can live, the more we develop the capacity to love, the more we can let somebody in on who we are sexually and emotionally. But it does take some soul work to forge that within ourselves.
Right. And this is also, you're hinting at, and even the stuff in the book you're describing, this is a living my way into it.
That's right.
It's not just a knowledgeable thing of it.
That's right.
It's not just a theory of it. It's a true, I got to have some actionable things that show I am living towards this.
Yes.
I am challenging and then bringing myself forward in some sort of tangible way.
Yeah, and that's something I grew up learning, was the idea that faith isn't just belief, it's action. It's like doing what you believe is right, but it's actually expressed through behavior. Mm-hmm. And that was my favorite quote of Schnarches, if I were to pick one, which is that we don't think our way into a new way of acting. We behave our way into a new way of thinking.
Yeah.
But, you know, you can have a concept, but you don't really know it until you live it, until you're actually putting boots on the ground and taking action that's exposing, that's risky, that's uncomfortable. But that's the way we reorganize our minds, that our souls grow. And no better place than marriage and family to learn how to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so accurate, just because it feels like we get in a world of more information. That's what's missing here in this equation. I just need you to write another book and another podcast and another show and all these different things, and then I'll have it.
It'll feel easy. And I mean, I've done the same thing. You know, I'm not ready to make a choice. And sometimes that's true. Sometimes you need more information. But oftentimes, if we're nervous, we're just like, you know, maybe tomorrow it will feel easy. Maybe tomorrow. You know, and I've actually limited the number of times I'm willing to see couples now to, you know, first of all, if they're not making meaningful behavior changes in between sessions, I don't continue. And also, you know, I have a fixed number that I'll offer because I don't like participating in that fantasy with people that more information is what's going to do the trick. It's right. A very tempting idea.
Yeah. I mean, that's what just came to my mind is the meme of next week will be easier, says every adult till they die.
Yeah, exactly. And I guess it is easier after you die. what's happening.
Fair. But yeah. Well, Jennifer, we could talk about this for a long, long time, but how can people find you and the book and the courses that you offer?
Sure. So just go to my website, which is my last name, finlayson-fife.com. I have, for those who don't know me and want to know a little more about me, you know, you can get on Conversations with Dr. Jennifer, and there I'm taking up lots of conversations on faith and intimacy and relationships it's just a free podcast. I have a podcast where I'm actually working with couples called Room for Two, and we change their voices and their names, but you get to see me working with couples on their issues around sexuality. And that's, you know, I've been told that's very helpful for people because mm-hmm. they can see themselves in another story and they don't have to actually be on the hot seat, so they can learn through other people. And they're like, oh my gosh. And a lot of people listen with their spouse and then they talk about it at night, you know, and they can make a lot of progress. You can learn about the book there. It's called That We Might Have Joy. I also have online courses, one called Sex Worth Wanting. And it's really about how to create joyful sex, joyful connection. And so, all that information's there. And you can always email the office if anyone has questions about it.
That's perfect. Well, I applaud your work and your willingness to do it so strongly. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, we ask that you please rate, review, and share the podcast so that more people can find and benefit from Dr. Jennifer's work.